Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let me begin with the past as I make my contribution towards this budget debate. Mr. Speaker, Maslow is known to have established a hierarchy of needs and place man's basic needs at the base of his pyramid of needs. These basic needs were, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, food, clothing, shelter, and love. But Mr. Speaker, I would like to add a little above those needs, personal health care and education. This is just my own entry, not Maslow's. Mr. Speaker, these needs should constantly be achieved or realized. But Mr. Speaker, they should not be realized or met for 2 months, then elapse, and then start to see whether they can be realized again. Because once we do that, we are going to deprive man of what we call basic satisfaction. Mr. Speaker, even today, these basic needs are found to be lacking among a number of people on our island. Therefore, we cannot espouse in this budget a positive economic growth that provides benefits for solutions on the whole. It is for such a reason that I contend that the economic growth of 5.4% is no doubt skewed. As it realized, it is skewed towards benefits for the minority,
yeah,
and not for the majority. What many solutions are perceived to see, Mr. Speaker, to hear and believe, they really do not. Because some of their basic needs are hardly met. They first need to feel at least a sense of security that they have money in their pockets to eat, first of all, to pay their bills, have some form of shelter, and have something set aside for rainy days. Once these basic needs are not satisfied adequately, there will be no feeling of satisfaction and inner peace among the people.
Yeah.
Nothing else really matters. Nothing really else is really appreciated to any form of degree. All the luxury in the world, Mr. Speaker, will not satisfy them. And as we say, the immediate needs of a hungry man is what really matters. I will allude to this a little later, Mr. Speaker, the skewed economic growth, skewed economic growth, Mr. Speaker, but I would like to examine the estimates a little closer, Mr. Speaker, the estimates of 2006-2007. Mr. Speaker, I hear former speakers boast of $1 billion budget. This is true, Mr. Speaker. There is $1 million budget on paper. In fact, it is 1,121 million to round it up. And I want to say so in particular for the benefit of those persons who don't understand these figures. But just like this, in the flip, say your $1 billion. Mais si c'est moi qui ai dit que je suis en train de faire 5 000 budgets, c'est 1 000, il y a 21 millions de dollars. L'argent, ça a l'année, ça a plus passé l'argent qui était proposé l'année passée. L'argent, ça a. Il n'y a plus passé l'année passée, parce qu'il y a 67 millions de dollars de plus passé l'année passée. The total increase this year is 167,314,385 dollars. Because of this recurrent revenue and recurrent capital is less than the amount proposed in the recurrent expenditure and the capital expenditure. As of like last year, there is a shortfall in the recurrent revenue. Last year, there was a shortfall of approximately $72 million. And this year, there is a shortfall of approximately $78 million in recurrent revenue. If you look
in the current Recurrent expenditure over recurrent revenue.
There's a difference. I said a shortfall. That's what I said. There is a similar trend this year as there was last year. In simple terms, what this signifies is that the amount of revenue collected is not sufficient to make up the sum of the revenue to be expended. And when this happens, the government, of course, has no choice but to get this money. And the only way, or one of the ways, that the government gets this money, as it has done in the past, is to go out and borrow more money. Go out and borrow. Last year, in 2005, the debt was approximately $1,600 million. Approximately $1.6 billion. But by the end of December 2005, after paying some of the debt and paying an interest of approximately $92 million, interest, $92 million interest, we were left with a balance of approximately $1,500 million, which is $1.5 billion. And if you add the amount that they propose to borrow in terms of loan this year, which is $335 million with interest, when you add this to $1,500 million, it will give you approximately $1,835 million. Now, if we continue this way, Mr. Speaker, we will soon reach the figure of $2 billion, which is $2,000 million. Mr. Speaker, if we say that we manage our money with prudence, and every year with our recurrent revenue, the money that we use to carry out our daily business, we are not able to raise that amount, and we go out to borrow large sums of money to make up the total amount that we need, what do you think is going to happen to St. Lucia if, for one reason, disaster should strike? We want you to think of this, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker, we are told that this positive economic growth of 5.4% was influenced by a number of sectors, and I want to quote those sectors: the construction sector of 10.4%, distributive trade of 9.2%, banking and insurance of 8.7%, communications 7.3%, hotel and restaurant 6.3%. Mr. Speaker, it is interesting to find out how many persons earn an income from these sectors in relation to the population. It would be interesting to know how many in relation to the population. Well, I would like to know. I am of the firm belief that percentages are relative and never tell or show the real picture. And let me draw an example here, Mr. Speaker. As a teacher, I'll use an example from my teaching past. Mr. Speaker, you have two English B teachers, one from school A and one from school B. Teacher in school A sends 5 students to write CXC English B exam. Teacher from school B sends 100 students to write English B exam. At the end, teacher A in school A, all 5 passed and therefore got 100% pass. Teacher B in school B, 50 students passed and got 50% pass. You will find that in school A is praised for its excellence, because everybody passed, so this 100% excellent performance. School B, 50% passed, good performance, because only 50% passed. But when you check the reality, Mr. Speaker, what you find, the exam, in writing an exam, it impacted upon 5 students, or 5 students benefited in school A, and 50 students benefited in school B. And the question I ask, where was the greater impact? Where was the greater impact? Although school B 50%, school A 100%. Mr. Speaker, this economic growth of 5.4% is skewed towards a minority of St. Lucians, as I have said before, within an urban belt, because a majority of St. Lucians do not seem to benefit from this relative growth. As a result, a few are getting rich and richer, while the pockets of many are empty. There is little cash flow in circulation among those whose pockets are empty. Why was the growth not influenced by agriculture and by earth in particular? The breadline for most of the people in the rural semi-urban communities and constituencies like Miku South, Miku North, Genri North, Beaufort North, yeah, is agriculture, and in particular banana cultivation. In 2005, the real output in this sector, as shown by the Economic Review, by 22%, the largest contraction, 36%, was observed in the banana sector. In fact, Mr. Speaker, we are told that banana production went to its lowest ebb in 2005. Only 30,007 tons, as the member for Miku North alluded to earlier on,
yeah,
as against the previous lowest in 2001, which was 34,044 tons. Prior to the reign of this government, Mr. Speaker, agriculture contributed significantly to the economy of St. Lucia. Agriculture and manufacture took their places side by side with tourism as the pillars of economic growth. There were definite links between agriculture and tourism. And in the, there were, the Prime Minister realized that the link between agriculture and tourism is important. And in this year's budget, he has suggested that something would be done to ensure that there are links between agriculture and tourism. The government, this government, has given the agricultural industry scant regard through sporadic attention. At one time, money is injected into the industry, and you heard the Prime Minister himself said that $107 million was injected into the banana industry alone. At one time, money is injected into the industry, only, especially in bananas, at least at 107, only to allow leaf spot disease to destroy several plantations because banana, the oil required to spray bananas is not imported. No, there is no real spraying plan for the banana industry.
Yeah, it's pretty.
The banana industry, Mr. Speaker, was virtually brought to its knees when it was privatized.
Yeah, yeah.
It has not been revived since. And as a consequence, 8,000 farmers have been sidetracked. 8,000. Many of those persons have not been able to recover and find alternative sources of income. Their pride has been hurt. Their pride has been hurt badly. They have lost confidence in the sector. And with this, they have also lost their integrity and their independence. Along with those farmers, thousands of other St. Lucians have lost out because of the multiplier effect of the banana law. The fact is, Mr. Speaker, there has been no real management plan for agriculture in St. Lucia. One time, interest is shown, money is pumped into it. Another time, no interest is shown, and things go bad again. Any government who considers agriculture to be very important will ensure that if $107 million was pumped into the banana industry, that they would have a plan to ensure that this industry is successful. And the problem there is not because banana doesn't have a place. And as the member for Shusel said, banana has a place. It has a place. It still has life. It's not there. And if it did not have life, the government would not continue to pump money into this industry. As a matter of fact, in this budget, an allocation was made towards the improvement of the banana industry. So it's not. The point is, my point is, Mr. Speaker, is that when you put substantial sums of money into an industry, you must have a proper management plan to ensure that good returns for the money goes to the industry. That's what I'm saying. In terms of diversification, Mr. Speaker, farmers lose out big time when they grow a variety of crops. Markets are scanty. The hotels and supermarkets give them the runaround and frustrate their efforts. The marketing world is not structured in a manner that is sufficient to facilitate and absolve farmers from their sorry predicament. Farmers, but I'm talking about diversification then, sir. Farmers require zonal agricultural depots fashioned along the lines of cooperatives to assist with the management of the diversification program. The Azure Agricultural Center can be utilized for such a purpose. We have a big building in Azure that is underutilized. And I think that center can be the beginning of one of those depots and be utilized for this purpose. Mr. Speaker, because of the acute frustration among farmers, and the fact that they have no alternative income, many of them have no alternative income, many of them have remained marginalized from the agricultural industry. For example, farmers in the Miku South will remember very well that as soon as this government came into power, it raised the fee of the rental of crowd land from $10 to $100 per acre. And if that was not enough, efforts were made to evict them from the land, even if they were well entrenched and had no alternative land to farm upon. I said efforts, I didn't say they were evicted, I said efforts were made. This is true. Roads. Why, for example, roads within many farming communities, Miku South being no exception, were left in deplorable conditions? Not even an attempt was made to plug some of the many potholes that existed on those roads. One of the select ones couldn't part of it, not been used to assist farmers in such communities. Yet we speak of economic growth when there is no equitable distribution of the benefits. For example, in terms of roads, the people of Miku South are made to suffer unduly. Not one pothole, not one pothole has been patched on most of the roads in that constituency that lead to the residential areas since 1997. And I can mention the Shikmanba Road, the Tiroche Lakouville Road, the Pebush Road. This is extremely true. Extremely true. The Minister of Communication and Works took these roads with me in July 2004 and was appalled by the deplorable condition. He promised to assist, but has not yet found it fitting to do so. He came himself, took pictures, correspondence was hardly acknowledged. The problem is always difficulty in accessing funds. The far and sad excuse was also given as an excuse for not being able to reconstruct the always busy Deriso Highway. A promise to do so was made since Mr. Cassius Elias represented the constituency. In spite of this situation, Mr. Speaker, millions are spent on the rehabilitation of several roads in other constituencies. What disturbs me most is the Miku South 2006 constituency report from the Ministry of Communication, Works, Transport and Public Utilities. That is, I think, for the fourth quarter, which shows that a total of $31,040 was spent on the Miku South constituency. But when I look at this report, Mr. Speaker, I'm talking about the amount spent, $31,040. Mr. Speaker, the problem is, given a name on this bedroom. It means that there is hardly any communication with me to stop. Even my name cannot be spelled by this one. Mr. Speaker, on this report, Mr. Speaker, I realize that former Nathaniel was included in Mikusas. Former Nathaniel is actually on the Beaufort North side. Former Nathaniel is actually on the Beaufort North side. And there is a river, the current river dividing Miku North from Miku South, and that was the river that was distilled. So, in other words, to pad up the amount that I was spent in Miku South, that is included. I also saw where potholing was done from Beaufort to Monrepo. Beaufort to Monrepo. Miku South is between the Kanas River and the Tumasi River. So if potholing was done from Beaufort to Monrepo, that should not be included in the report for Miku South. So, Mr. Speaker, when it is said that money was spent on Miku South for that quarter, I think the only amount that was spent was to do potholing on the Asher Deriso Road, but it was not Asher to Deriso because only potholing was only done in the Asher area, lower Asher to upper Asher. The other side from Asher to Deriso, there were over 100 potholes, which was so bad that we had to try and fill ourselves. I said over 100, I know, because we patched them.
Yeah, I patched myself. You patched yourself. Self-help.
Unemployment, Mr. Speaker. The plight of farmers has caused many of them to be on the breadline. We know that.
Yeah.
In light of this significant growth in the economy, the question I was going to ask before I listened to the Prime Minister was, why were so many persons still unemployed? But the Prime Minister, in his budget address, said that the figure stood at 23%, but it was reduced to 18%. And for the last 3 months of 2005, it went, October to December, it went down to 15%. 15.7. Now, if this is so, I want to ask the question. The period October to December, whether the persons who were employed on a short-term basis, or were they employed through sustainable employment? Now that would make a difference. Because if it is a short term, the percentage would be reduced. But once that stops, the unemployment rate will go up again. So we need to make that distinction to say whether it was short term or whether it was sustainable employment. Yes, you know that in 3 months, you get 2,000 people short-term work, the rate will decrease. But once it stops, it will rise up again. That is quite true. Mr. Speaker, as we know, unemployment leads to idle hands, and our youth, who are generally active and vibrant individuals, become bored quickly with little to do. In certain instances, like in the rural areas, There are few avenues open for the youth to keep them constantly occupied. Sporting facilities are sometimes uncared for, and there are sometimes no appropriate facilities as well. There are also sometimes hardly any opportunities for self-improvement in the rural areas. As a consequence, as a consequence, many of our young persons fall by the wayside and turn to drugs and other crime-related activities. Mr. Speaker, any initiative that can combat crime is welcomed by me. Any initiative. I understand from the Prime Minister's address that he will be getting help from outside. 7 ex-police officers from Britain. As I said, any initiative to combat crime is welcome. However, getting help from outside is acceptable, but I think, like in other Caribbean islands, as has been expressed in other Caribbean islands, like in Trinidad, for example, there should be dialogue with the Police Welfare Association so as to have an understanding that there would be officers to undergo training while these men are working in St. Lucia, whether they understudy them or whether they undergo training separately, to replace them when the time comes. That would ensure that at the end of their service in St. Lucia, we would not be left with a vacuum and resort to the same old problem. Mr. Speaker, crime is a menace to our country, and everyone is affected by this scourge. I would like to make this proposal, Mr. Speaker. We need to get our policemen back on the street patrols and provide them with the requisite equipment to tackle crime head on. Policemen who service rural areas from nearby villages or from police stations, town police stations, should be allowed to make random patrol and spot check within these areas. For example, we have a police station in Wiku, and they serve Deriso, Ajah, Lacouville. And I'm saying that the policemen, instead of remaining in the police station, they should be allowed to make spot checks in Deriso, in Monrepo, in Lacouville, so that they will get to know the residents, they will get to build a community-based relationship with the residents, and they will even get to know the trouble spots, the trouble areas, and the troublemakers in the various communities. This is what I'm advocating, but I'm saying you need to get them into the community. Listen. Yes, I know, but then in my area it's not happening yet, so I'm suggesting that this happens. This would definitely require manpower, it would require transport, and prudent management of the available resources. Whatever we have, we try to do that. Mr. Speaker, we are already told that the forensic lab is nearing completion. I think this is very good. But I would like to add, are officers already being trained to man such a lab? It is necessary. This is necessary so that as soon as this is completed, we can put our officers at work. Mr. Speaker, I also heard the Prime Minister spoke about programs for the youth. In April 2004, the government proposed a program called YAP that would train youth for employment in partnership with the private sector. 2,500 youth were to be trained through this program. And I know the Prime Minister said that through the NSDC that a certain number would also be trained and an allocation was made towards this. What I need to ask is, what is the success rate of this program to date, of the YAP program? Whether, how many persons have been trained, what constituencies have benefited, and how well do these people fit into the private sector? I think this is necessary that we can know so that I can recommend, if possible, young people from my constituency to join the program, if I get the correct answers. Sporting facilities. It was recommended in 2004 that a sports policy should be incorporated within the national youth policy. It was felt that if this was adopted, it would help to develop sports at the community level. But what I ask is, how can this be possible if in certain areas or in certain constituencies, the facilities there are not taken care of? And I refer specifically to the Davidson playing field, which I understand is now not suitable for sporting activities. It's not fit. Although the Davidson playing field, although recently we were instrumental in building concrete drains around it to ensure that water does not remain on the surface. So right now, this is a problem because it has been unfit, unsuitable. It was myself and the people from the community. We also have the Brochure playing field, which has been abandoned for some time. And I made a suggestion in the last budget that this playing field should be upgraded. I understand that there are plans to upgrade it. I don't know. But as I said, that playing field is away from the residential area. But if it is to be upgraded, then you would need toilet facilities, change rooms, a little shelter, and at least a fence, because it is very close to the road, and it's a very, very large playground. I understand that something would be done to improve this brochure, and I'm hoping that something would be done as soon as possible, so that at least there would be a playing field in the constituency that the young people could use. Tourism. The economic growth in this sector has been very significant. It is the principal engine of economic growth, and we are it accounted for 13.6% of real GDP in 2005. However, as I said previously, and I'd like to expand on this a little, we believe that there should be a strong link, and I think the Prime Minister mentioned this, among agriculture, tourism, and manufacture. One sector should complement the other as far as possible. Farmers should be able to trade with the hotels, for example, if not individually, through the agricultural depots. If you set your agricultural depots and the farmers take their produce to the depots, then they can trade through the agricultural depot and ensure proper packaging and processing of produce. Tourism should not be developed at the expense or the detriment of agriculture. It must be realized that only a small part of the tourism dollar remains in St. Lucia, especially in cases of the all-inclusive foreign-owned hotels. However, the agricultural sector has to generate foreign exchange and the monies earned remain in St. Lucia. As I've been said before, the multiplier effect of the agricultural dollar circulates among and impacts on several other persons within the country. All developed countries around the world place extremely great emphasis on agriculture and go as far as subsidizing the industry to a great extent. They realize that a country that cannot feed itself is bound to be doomed at some point. Mr. Speaker, universal health care, which I know is being spoken about, and if you recall, Mr. Speaker, since I came to Parliament, I have always pleaded for some kind of health insurance for persons out there, especially the elderly. I always put it every year. And now that it is in the making, and I understand from the budget address of the Prime Minister that there will be this pilot project of giving free medicines to persons with hypertension and diabetes.
The honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Yes, a little more. About half an hour. Okay.
Mr. Speaker, I move for the invocation of Section 3210 to allow the honourable member from Miku South an additional, what do you want?
Half an hour.
30 minutes. Honourable members, the question is that Section 30, Standing Order 32, can be invoked to allow the honourable member for Miku South an additional half an hour to make his contribution. And I'll put the question, as many are of that opinion, say aye. As many are of the contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Member, be respected.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. As I was saying, medicines will be given to the elderly and for diabetes and hypertension. However, I am hoping that this health care plan could be implemented as soon as possible to help all the other persons, the handicapped, the disabled, the persons with no income who have difficulty in the full healthcare program to enable them to obtain proper healthcare. But the question is, we have not been told how this program will be funded. Although we are having a pilot project, but we need to begin to think of how we are going to fund this program, the entire program. And it would be important whether we could be told how this would be done for the benefit of the people of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, in last year's budget, I remember alluding to the high cost of various food items. And I remember in particular talking about the cost of chicken back increasing, chicken products, milk, biscuits, and so on. In this year's budget, I realized that the Honorable Prime Minister has removed the consumption tax on a number of products related to chicken products, milk, and some canned items. Mr. Speaker, there are a number of other food items which a number of St. Lucians have problem with and they are unable to cook with. One such food item is fish, Mr. Speaker. The price of fish, have increased, especially when the demand is high. You pay even more for it when the demand is high. This year, Mr. Speaker, during the Easter week, mackerel, which people normally used to buy to eat it on a yellow yam, was sold at the price of $9 a pound. Now, dolphin is also sold generally around $8 and $9 a pound. Sunfish has also gone up, Mr. Speaker. What has happened since then, you find that many persons are unable to purchase fish because of the high price. A family with five children would rather buy chicken back or chicken wings rather than buying a pound of dolphin for $9, which cannot be shared among five children. So what you find is that a number of families go on for a considerable long time before being able to eat fish. I don't know what can be done to help those persons. I think what can be done is to ensure that something is done to provide them with the necessary employment or provide them with the markets where they can sell their produce. Because before, when they were not marginalized from the banana industry, they were able to go to Beaufort and buy a whole dolphin. Manufacturing. This sector has contributed 5.6% to real GDP. It said that the value of output in the manufacturing sector increased by 10.2%. to $156.7 million in 2005 compared to 3% growth in the previous year. The performance was dominated by the activity in food and beverages, paper and paperboard, and electrical subsectors. While this may be so, a big gap has been created in the lives of several persons by the closure of some of the factories in the south and east of the country, like Bell Fashion in Denry, Hortex, and other factories in the south. Many persons are on the breadline since then, as no alternative forms of employment have been found. These people continue to have no money in their pockets, and have not benefited from the economic growth of 5.4%. What have cottage industries, Mr. Speaker? Have persons been given the opportunity and incentive to go into cottage industries? I do not think so, Mr. Speaker. And the emphasis on the importation of most products, especially by hotels and other food establishments, are well documented. This country seems to be importing everything these days. I understand from powdered eggs to Chinese tamarinds. It was also said that even dry coconuts were imported to make certain kind of cakes. All this, Mr. Speaker, is done at the expense and detriment of the local agricultural producers. St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, per capita, we were told, is considered to be one of the greatest consumers of chicken products. As a consequence, St. Lucia imports large volumes of chicken products at a very high cost on a yearly basis. All this is done at the detriment of the poultry industry in St. Lucia. And we understand that poultry farmers, as well as pig farmers, are crying out loud for help. What is the government doing to assist them, Mr. Speaker? They are producing, and therefore something should be done to assist those farmers. The construction sector, Mr. Speaker, it recorded substantial growth of 10.4% in 2005. The share of construction to total real GDP increased from 7.6% in 2004 to 8%. While all this may sound good, one must ask, where are the construction projects taking place and who are the people who benefit? I know, Mr. Speaker, there is much construction activity for the expansion of hotel space and residential houses in the north. The building of roads and the expansion of facilities for World Cup 2007. I also know that incentives are provided by government to facilitate such expansion that is taking place. And as I said, this is mainly in the north. Persons in the eastern and southern regions hardly benefit. Well, this is not really open yet. Road development program also contributes to this construction boom. However, contracts for major road construction fell mainly in foreign hands. St. Lucians are aware of this. Contracts for major government projects also fall in foreign hands. For example, we understand that the Chinese contractors have contracts for two secondary schools and the two hospitals to be built in St. Lucia. We understand. What is even more disturbing is that these contractors used to pay, and I'm glad that something was done to help the tradesmen or the construction workers, half the amount what a residential house owner would pay. Mr. Speaker, we have all our government contracts are also awarded to a small number of contractors. No, no, I said other. I mentioned the contracts that were given to the foreigners. Some of them, like the big contractors, incur cost overruns. Even some of the small contractors, because I know, for example, this happens to some small contractors. And I remember, whilst I mentioned cost overrun, I remember at some point the Prime Minister promised to tell St. Lucians what was the cost of the cost overrun over the Soufre Beaufort Highway. Okay. With all of this going on, it is well known that the average solution has extreme difficulty to construct a home. Firstly, the price of land has escalated at such a high rate that even the middle income persons find difficulty in buying land. As we also know, the price of building materials have skyrocketed. Cement is usually unavailable these days. And was recently increased to $15 a bag. What is happening now is that when there is a shortage, the small man is asked to pay $20 a bag. The price of steel has more than doubled, and plywood has moved from about $40 to $50 a sheet to between $85 and $100 a sheet. Now I'm just saying the difficulty that the people are having. Quarry waste material has also gone up from $15 a cubic yard to $20 a yard. Added to this is the increase of the transportation for all materials. Tell me, how can the low income or the no income man ever get to build a small shelter, which is a basic need? How then can the average man build a house when cost of living has generally increased drastically and the banks make it difficult for them to obtain a loan at a reasonable interest rate? Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister in his budget address indicated that this budget was a tax-free budget. No new taxes were added for locals except for an increase in traveling tax for the first. However, Mr. Speaker, that still does not absolve us from the number of taxes that we have been paying. I mean, last year, I recall listing at least 13 categories of tax which St. Lucians have to pay. So that does not absolve the St. Lucians from paying tax. I think we are paying already too much. And the question now I want to ask, will the VAT be introduced in the near future? Will the VAT be introduced in the near future? You for education, I want us to spend a few minutes on that. The government has announced that the Ministry of Education will institute universal secondary education come September 2006. The concept sounds very good. But are we really prepared for such an undertaking? And I will try to go through why I'm asking this question. Are we set and prepared for the implementation of universal secondary education. Universal secondary education cannot be introduced in the secondary school as the school exists, but must have all the support systems and necessary resources in place to cause it to work effectively and efficiently. Out of a very relevant idea can spring out a monster or a nightmare if one does not tread purposefully and carefully. Universal secondary education will no doubt definitely heighten the expectation of both students and parents. And so many more job opportunities must be created to satisfy such expectations at the completion of the secondary school system. And I ask the question, will students be geared towards two different programs of certification? And I ask whether there would be a CXC program and a certificate of secondary school education program. If so, are the distinctions properly defined? Is this within the scope of the OECS education reform program? What are the subject offerings? The subject offerings must be carefully considered in light of CSME. There ought to be, in my view, a gradual shift from a grammar type approach to a comprehensive type approach. The teaching must be student-oriented and should give students an opportunity to develop at their own pace. They should select the subject options best suited to their capabilities. In essence, both the academic and technical skills ought to be harnessed. In every new program, there is always a hidden curriculum. However, there is this realistic fear that not by accident, most of the less stable students will be locked together and find themselves prevalent in only certain secondary schools on the island. When this happens, we may be faced with the development of what at some time was called subnormal secondary school culture, a subnormal secondary school culture within the education system. The role of these schools would be mainly to cater for less stable students. In light of the various challenges, problems, and varying types will be encountered. Teacher training is also essential. Teachers must be trained to deal effectively with mixed ability groupings of varying disparity in ability levels. It must also be taken into consideration that less able students tend to develop low self-concept and the consequence create a variety of social problems. Such low self-concept tends to materialize in low achievement if such image of self is not effectively reversed. Two of the problems associated with low achievement at public secondary schools are dropouts and indiscipline of all sorts that regrettably escape into violence and crime within the education system. I thought I would make these few points on the universal education system. As I said, it sounds good, but we have to look at these things because that is not what I was saying. I was just saying we need to look at. I will talk to you privately about it. One stone water. Quickly. Mr. Speaker, we realize from what Anson said about Wasco, that Wasco has failed to deliver the type of service that it promised consumers when it tried to give justification for its 100% increase in the cost of water. Wasco's performance has been rather frustrating than beneficial to consumers. It provided very little satisfaction for the charges it demanded. What is most disturbing is that Wasco, after increasing its water rates by 100%, has a total debt liability of $112 million, which the government has responsibility to pay using the taxpayers' money. So consumers must, what it means that consumers must pay Wasco's inefficiency and lack of prudent management in two different ways. Pay charges for water and pay the debt. Mr. Speaker, let me say that it took Wasco over 3 years to replace a solar water tank in the Miku South constituency. However, we are pleased that the tank is eventually connected to the mains just a few weeks ago. And as a result of this, we are anticipating and expecting an improvement in our water supply.
The honourable member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
I just have just to round up quickly on my constituency. That's fine. The government has really taken the people of Miku South for granted. It is slow in reacting to the needs and requests of the people. Sometimes it just does not want to know. The road network is in a horrible and deplorable condition, and there is utter neglect of sporting facilities and social buildings. Some of these buildings need facelifts. The only building that has been well kept is the multi-purpose, which is taken care of by a committee. And I must praise them for the efforts which they have made in ensuring that this multi-purpose center remains in a very presentable manner. To keep the roads motorable and commissable to a certain extent, constituents and the district representative have had to work together to fill in the several potholes on a quarterly basis. I am grateful to everyone who came out to help, those who wish well, and those who gave their support. The youth need to find employment and find opportunities for self-development. The farmers require markets for the diversified produce, and wish that the Archer Agricultural Rural Center would be transformed into a depot to give them a start. They were trying it. We are trying it. The constituents of Archer and other areas need to see that some attention is given to regularizing the settlements on the lands where they live. They need to be given opportunities to acquire title and ownership, especially of the area where they reside, as was done in other communities in St. Lucia. The people of Miku South do not want to be regarded as second-class citizens, but need to be given the privileges and opportunities given to the people of other constituencies. They do not wish to see that only a few persons who are supporters of the party, the SLP party, are the only ones who are given opportunities and privileges. They too wish to stake their claim. The what? They too wish to stake their claim. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you.
Yeah.
was already employed. Was already employed.